nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
Our speaker today is Dmitry Zemyonov, who is a surface scientist at FERC, and if you look at the back, he received his PhD in physics and mathematics, so we have somebody who has a real PhD and not one of these engineering type. Professor Bowman looks at me like, why are you saying that? So he's a surface science application scientist at FERC, and he's going to be talking to us about XPS,
what we do with it. Thank you very much. Okay, first of all, thank you very much for the invitation to make a presentation here. So, again, my name is Dmitry Zemyonov, and I'm working at Berkman Nanotechnology Center. I'm in charge for surface science facilities there, and my position call is surface science application scientist. I'm just repeating this for recording because I have a mic. Okay. Okay, so what I want to talk today. So we have a nice instrument at Berkman Nanotechnology Center, which is nearby, and this is spectrometer has several nice features, which is listed here, and it's located at the Berk Lab 1077. And if you want to use it, you should contact me. Here is my email. And I would like to tell a few words about the features of the spectrometer to facilitate the fusion of the spectrometer, because I would like I want that the spectrometer use as more extensive as possible, but using of the spectrometer possible only if you understand the meaning of the technique. So during this talk, first I want to focus on the physical background of X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy. I want to talk about photoemission, quantitative and qualitative analysis. And also I want to make a few real example of XPS using. And one of the example, it's a salt gel modified with the covalently bound peptides. It will example of a chemical shift when it's, you can sense the chemical state of the element. And another example, it's a polyethylene glycol on a gold surface. We want to demonstrate using angle result X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy. And another, it's a silver oxidation by mixture of nitric oxide and oxygen. And this is a depth profiling study. And another example is just imaging XPS. Okay, so let's start from introduction. So surprisingly, what is the photoemission? Photoemission is a process which is remove electron using a light from a bulk material. So this is a photoemission. Surprisingly, the photoemission was known for more than 100 years already. A spark enhancement was found by Hertz in 1880. So it's more almost 130 years ago. So technique been recognized and received two Nobel Prizes actually in 1921 and in 1951. In 1921, it's Albert Einstein got a Nobel Prize for explanation photoelectric effect, and Sternhardt and Surfers got a Nobel Prize for creating a real spectrometer, and they demonstrate that this is a spectrometer. Which is the original name, electron spectrometer for chemical analysis, is sensitive to the chemical state of the element, and the chemical composition of a sample can be approached using this tool. Okay. So general concepts of XPS. So if you have an atom and you eliminate this atom with X-ray radiation, you remove the score level electrons and leaving a hole behind. So this is energy level This is an energy diagram of original atom. So you take this atom, remove to the vacuum. Versus electron should travel first to the Fermi level, then go to the vacuum level, and then in the vacuum it will have some kinetic energy. So this is energy equal to the photon energy. So this basically described by Einstein equation is here. So that's binding energy. Binding energy, this is interesting characteristic of an element, or can be calculated as a final state energy minus initial state energy. So using a Cooperman theorem, which is basically Frohe's wave function for an atom during a photo emission process, we can say that this will be energy of original atom. So we are not taking into consideration any relaxation effect. And so we can estimate this binding energy. This binding energy is unique for every element. So every element characterized by a few lines. For example, here it's an O1s line. This is an electron which is removed from an oxygen 1s level. So there is here another line of the oxygen. This is a Auger line. So here is a carbon line. This is an electron which is coming from a carbon atom from a 1s orbital. Here is a Auger electron. Silicon has two lines here, 2s line and 2p line. So we can approach only line which is deep enough for our X-ray radiation. Because, for example, silicon 1s line, it's deeper here, which is our energy of X-ray is not enough to approach this line, which is somewhere here. So every element has unique pattern, and if you record it entire energy region, which we call a service spectrum, we can tell what's the element in your sample. And also, cross-section for a different levels is different, and it's usually well-tabulated. So we can calculate the amount of the element in the sample. So how we quantified our data? Basically, this is a diagram, probably a little bit scary, but I will skip it fast. Otherwise, we will start to fall asleep. So this is electron optics enters, and this is our sample. So emission from this part of the sample can be described by this this equation. But ordinary word speaking, this is it will be dependent on the flux of our X-ray. It will be dependent on number of atom of an element of interest. Of course, it will be dependent on differential cross-section and acceptance angles, because if you make open your electron optics, you take more electron. If you close electron optics, you take less electron. Okay, probability for no less escape from a specimen without a negligent change of a direction. So because the electron now shall travel through the sample and receive our received by our energy analyzer, and in this way it can be scattered and missed for analysis. And also instrument detection efficiency, because we have here, after electron optics, we have a channel plate or channel tron or any electron detection devices, which has a certain efficiency. Okay, so this is normal words. This is how it can be written mathematically. So for a semi-infinite specimen, we can integrate this through x, y, and z. And assuming homogeneous distribution of element in the specimen, we can get this expression. Okay, so fortunately, life is much more easy. This is a real example when, for example, you have iron, a chromium, and oxygen in a sample. So you integrate the area under this peak, this is area under photoemission peak, then you just normalize the relative sensitivity factor for a corresponding peak, which is, I told you, well tabulated. Then you also divide by transmission function, which is empirically chosen for a certain spectrometer, and you get a normalized area. When you sum all normalized area and divide the normalized area of element of interest, you get atomic concentration. Okay, so you know what amount of iron, chromium, and oxygen in your sample. Okay, so brief conclusion of this part. So we can see that X-ray is a surface-sensitive technique providing the chemical information within the topmost 100 angstrom. Yeah. So I skip one part of talk, and this is a conclusion probably is not clear. Question, why we're talking about 100 angstrom? So basically, if you take an X-ray, so remember it's the energy of our X-ray in the range of at least 1 kilo electron volt. So 1 kilo electron volt of photon can penetrate to solid on a distance about micron. So we should talk here about probably micron, but not about 100 angstrom. But the reason for 100 angstrom is very simple. We are used as a proper electron. So we basically sense an electron which travels through media. And mean free path of an electron traveling through media in a range of 10, 30, 40 angstrom. So versus determine our sensitivity. So this technique is very, very surface sensitive. And versus advantages of this technique, and of course versus a disadvantage. So because all process usual, all surface reaction or catalysis, all interesting stuff is happen on the surface. So this is a technique, should be right technique to study this phenomena. But disadvantage of this technique, if you want to know what's going on in a bulk, probably this technique is not very helpful. And especially if you poorly prepared sample, breathe on this sample, you see dust, remove this dust, breathe on the sample. So this sample already gone for analysis. So if you bring it for XPS analysis, I can even without analysis, I can tell you what you will have. We'll have a silicon carbon, and so probably 60% of a carbon, 20% of a silicon, and oxygen up to the balance. So, so this is a really surface-sensitive technique and required a careful sample preparation. So we can perform a quantitative analysis, so we can calculate atomic concentration of the element with accuracy of a half atomic percent. So we basically can identify the chemical state of the element. And about this capability of the technique, I want to talk in another part of my talk. So now I want to talk about application, and here I want to demonstrate a really chemical shift, the sensitivity of a technique towards the chemical state of the element. And this is outlined of a stock example which I want to show. So let's start from the first, salt gel modified with covalently bond peptide. So this work was done in a collaboration with Bindley Bioscience Center. So I'm quite glad to collaborate with Jenna Rikus and Sabrina Jedlika, and they provide me excellent sample. So I was very happy to work with them, because basically, basically it's not easy to work with a biological sample, and I realized that I'm talking in the material science department. And I probably should talk more about an organic sample, which I will demonstrate later. But this is actually more challenging sample. So, and I'm glad that we can do some work with a challenging sample. So this means we can better work with a simpler system. This is what I would like to demonstrate during this example. So we want to talk about a chemical shift. What is a chemical shift of an element? As we were talking, a binding energy, which we're actually measuring in the XPS, it's a difference between the final energy and the initial energy. So we, as I told, if you froze wave function of an atom and assume the wave function of the atom does not change during the ionization process, we can calculate the binding energy using the Kuperman theorem. But so this means if it's a initial wave function of the atom changed due to the chemical bond, we should be able to measure this. So if you calculate the original energy level for a neutral atom, and then this atom bond with another atom, you should expect to observe a chemical shift. So this is initial state effect because it's dependent on initial state of our atom. So if during a bond, atom have a deficit of electron density, so became a positively charged, that means our nuclear of the atom became less shielded. Electron come closer, and it will be equivalent in the energy diagram that the energy level is going down. So when you try to photo excite this electron, you will measure a higher energy. So it's a tiny shift. Sometimes it's a few electron volts. Sometimes it's only tenths of electron volts. So it's dependent on the element, dependent on the charge. So and another example, if instead of posing a positive charge, atom posed a negative charge, so nuclear became overshielded and level shifted up. When you measure binding energy, you see a decrease of a binding energy. So now, how we can use it, this phenomenon? So as I told you, I want to demonstrate on an example of a peptide, which is practically important, especially to integrate an iron into an engineering device. And we consider it four different peptides, which is shown here. The structure of this peptide is kind of complex, at least for me. I'm a physicist by education. When I see peptide, oh, what is it? So many different atoms. I like to operate with the CO, carbon, oxygen, nitric oxide, and this is nitrogen to oxygen, so I can see all vibration, I can understand the symmetry, but what is it? So this is a monster for me. So, but when we look carefully, we can identify the basically six different state of the carbon atoms. So one type of a carbon, chemical type of a carbon, it's a carbon which is bond with another carbon. This is carbon which bond with another carbon. Type number two, which is a carbon which is bond with nitrogen. Then there is a type number three, which is a carbon which is bond with oxygen. So amida species, he is amida species. Then carboxyl species, this is a carboxyl species. So this is a carbon and a carboxyl species. And this is arginine carbon is here. So we can calculate the number of the atom in certain chemical state. And we already can predict what shape in the XPS peak we are going to get. So we run an experiment for an RGD peptide. This is a free peptide. It's not on a silo gel yet because we want to validate our technique first. This was a hypothesis. So for arginine, we have 20 atoms in the CC position, in CN position 13, and as is shown in this table. So this is a peak, for example. This is a peak. It's characterized carbon in a which is bond with another carbon. When a carbon bonds with a nitrogen or with a, oxygen, a carbon donates electron density. So the carbon became positively charged. You remember the diagram when it became positively charged, energy level is going down, and photo emission peak experience shift to higher binding energy. So it's this peak. So when it's in amida species, it's charge transferring even bigger. So we observe this peak. When it's a carboxyl species, it's a this peak. So and the arginine is here. So we can make this as a constraint characterizing our peptide. And of course, in a real life sample, you can find some impurity which come from a processing of this sample, which is in this particular case, which is a CF2. And of course, you can't avoid residual hydrocarbon. Well, but the level of impurity is quite reasonable. So from this structure, we can extract our peptide structure. So we can do the same for basically for all peptide which I demonstrate performed this calculation. First, we want to validate this technique because you can say, okay, you are doing some mathematical treatment. You take a 6 exponent and try to fit some curve with a 6 exponent. So it's weird. You can fit any curve with a 6 exponent, of course. But we need to find some physical test, which will, physical or chemical test, to validate our technique. One of the validation which we made, we calculate the concentration of a peptide using this curve fitting procedure, and then compare with the nitrogen concentration. Of course, in a peptide, we have a certain ratio between a carbon and oxygen and nitrogen. So we can count atoms, and we can predict what the ratio it should be there. And this is actually our validation procedure. So this is an ideal value, which is calculated from structural formula, and this is what we get from XPS. So this is, again, for oxygen, the same. This is ideal ratio between oxygen and carbon peptide, and this is calculated by XPS. So when I first to calculate it, I say, wow. So basically, it's an excellent agreement. If I did not do it myself, or a student bring it to me, I will say, it seems to me you did something with data. So, because basically it's very good agreement. I was kind of surprised to find this. Okay, but this is the fact. Basically, we run not a one sample. We get a quite good statistic for samples. So, procedure is working. So, the next step, it's a more challenging task. Now we're making a covalently bond peptide. So, we have a thin film of a peptide on, in fact, it's on an silica. So this involves another processing step, so involve more impurity, and also chemistry can be, solar gel chemistry might be not working well. And this is a sample already practically important because a powder can be basically analyzed by GCMS or at least, or it can be NMR can help to analyze a powder peptide. But this is a thin film of a peptide on a surface of silica. So if you try to make an NMR, I don't know how many days only acquisition, normal acquisition take, and then you have to analyze the spectrum which you get. So it will be quite challenging. But this XPS is a surface-sensitive technique, so it should be right task for a technique. So since we already know, we use the same approach, we know the ratio between the peak, we know chemical state of the carbon, and we can, again, make a peptide constraint, which is shown here. So this is a residual hydrocarbon peak, a red one. So we see level of residual hydrocarbon now increase. So you have, unfortunately, we had a potassium also, and okay, so and CF2. But anyway, now we can again recognize a peptide on the surface. And we run the same validation procedure. We compare a ratio for nitrogen and carbon. So we get again, in my opinion, very good agreement with us. I was again very surprised to see such good agreement. Well, to make a little bit life easier, when I saw this part, which is matching not very well with the oxygen. And so it tell me, I'm an experimentalist. I don't like to have data without any error. So as long as I can explain an error. So I can see, okay, here is some error coming. But I can explain this error because we have a substrate of SiO2. And versus SiO2 give a huge signal of coming from oxygen from a SiO2 structure. So, and of course, it will screen oxygen coming from a peptide, and the split of this two broad peak, it's almost impossible. So this is where this is arrow coming from. So, but the nitrogen, which is can be considered as a fingerprint of a peptide, give a good agreement. So we're good. And this means all our approach, it's about a chemical shift, can be applied for a peptide system. So, again, talking about anorganic example, sometimes it's a problem, it's even easier. In an anorganic chemistry, for example, if you want to identify the chemical state of metal, okay, if metal gets oxidized, it's getting a huge positive charge. And this shift will be huge. Sometimes it's a several electron volts, so we can see two separate peaks here. So this is a more challenging example. Well, and now with XPS, we can also extract another information which is probably not approachable by another technique. Since we have all data, we can calculate the thickness of peptide layers. And since we have two fingerprints, it's a carbon line and a nitrogen line, we can calculate the thickness of from carbon and nitrogen. And also we can calculate the coverage from coverage of a peptide on a surface. What's remarkable is here, but if you look on the coverage calculated from a nitrogen and a carbon, we're pretty much in a good agreement. But if you look for a thickness, it doesn't make any sense. So it's a change pretty much when you go from a carbon line to the nitrogen line, which does not make any sense for me. And pretty much the same model was used for a calculation. This is, remember, I showed you awful equation in the beginning. So basically, calculate the height here, thickness here, and coverage here from this awful equation. So I use the same equation, but here we have a good agreement with of our data, but thickness doesn't match. So the conclusion from here, we discussed quite a lot, and the explanation is simple. So we probably deal with a different folding of a peptide on the surface. So we didn't find in the literature any mention of such kind of phenomena, because it's kind of a difficult to approach, difficult to prepare a sample and also to see. But this is a remarkable feature. It looks like it originates from a different folding of a peptide. So what we have here, carbon is an outer shell of a peptide, and nitrogen is folding inside, which is typical for amida groups. And of course, a nitrogen electron should travel through a carbon shell. It will be attenuated. So, and also it will be closer to the surface. So apparently, nitrogen thickness will be thinner because it's closer to the surface. So, and the carbon, which is in an outer shell, will give me a bigger number. Also, if we compare, you can see that the different peptides behave a little bit differently. For example, these two peptides, it's probably more straight, in straight conformation, whereas in other two peptides, they're more folded as a global on the surface. So this is information is difficult to get by our technique. Okay, so luckily we come to the end of our one example, so we can make some conclusion. So here I try to demonstrate the example of a chemical shift in the XPS. So hopefully I demonstrate that XPS is an informative technique for a characterization of organic films. First, we can verify the presence of a surface peptide, and we can quantify it and qualify our data. We can calculate the thickness and the coverage of the film, and we also can make some conclusion about the structure of the peptide. And I'm pretty much optimistic that another complex molecules, organic molecule, can be approached by a technique. Okay, so now example which I want to talk about, angle resolved XPS. So this is our example, it's deal with polyethylene glycol on a gold surface, and it's done in a collaboration with a chemical engineering department with Steve Bowden and Big Van Fun. What is it, the angle resolved XPS, and what we are talking about here? So as I mentioned, we have to travel. How many minutes I have? Okay, good. Yeah, I like to talk sometimes, so you can stop me. Okay, as I mentioned, the electron in a sample has to travel through media. So if you change the travel distance electrons through media, you can somehow attenuate with travel distance. You can change information depth. So if we collect our spectra in a normal direction, where is the cosine theta equal to 1, so the sample is like this. We are collecting in this direction. So we can find that 95% of the electron coming from a width of a 3 lambda. So if you start to rotate, sample, so this is a 3 lambda. So this actual thickness will be equal to 3 lambda multiplied by cosine theta. So it start to reduce with the angle. So you can go to very, very sensitive techniques. So here, So here is a simple example. This is the probability to escape without any loss for a photoelectron with a mean free path equal to 1 nanometer. So when you change detection angle, theta, you can see at 75 degree, the probability to escape from a 5 angstrom, it's a 0.15. So it's very low. So the technique became, it's very, very sensitive. And you see it became steeply dependent on the depth. So we can sense very, very surface when we go to the 75, 85 degree. So we just, so X-ray direction is fixed, analyzer is fixed. We just rotate our sample. Okay, and collecting the spectra. And as soon as we come into 75 degree, we're already in very, very sensitive, surface-sensitive regime. Okay, so let's move our gear to an example. So I would like to demonstrate it on an example of polyethylene glycol, which is adsorbent layers, and this is probably ideal object for an angle-resolved study. The main question is how polyethylene glycol adsorbs on the surface, and is it really ideal self-assembled monolayers form on the surface? So So ideal self-assembled monolith is supposed to have a perpendicular orientation to the surface, and it's supposed to have a coverage equal to one monolith. This means one gold atom will have one molecule of adsorbate. Okay, so this is people suppose, but we would like to measure. Is it really so? So we prepared a polyethylene glycol sample on a gold evaporated on a silicon 111 surface. Polyethylene glycol molecules is shown here. Again, we can use the same approach which we discussed before. We have a free chemical state of a carbon atom. Carbon atom which bond to the carbon. So this is actually sulfur. It's equivalent to the carbon in this case. It's one and another one. So two carbon atoms which bond to only to the carbon. And 16 atoms of a carbon which bond to the oxygen. And one carbon in a carboxyl group is here. So we actually expect this is carboxyl carbon. We should expect a peak here for a carbon-carbon bond. And here the peak for a CO bond. So this is our constraint. So when we start to rotate, we can see that this is a peak increase. So we have, unfortunately, as I told you, we have a residual hydrocarbon. Okay, we can live with this as long as we can understand this. Okay, another element which can be used for a characterization is sulfur. So polyethylene glycol attached through a tile group to the gold. So this is a sulfur spectra which is collected depending on the angle. So sulfur is characterized by a two peak because this is a doublet. So this is a red, it's a one state. This is a peak, a two peak characterized one state. And as soon as we start to rotate the sample, we see that another peaks appear here. And this is basically characterized as sulfur, which is not bond to the surface. So this is a red peak characterized as sulfur, bond to the surface, and this is where shifted one and a half electron volts from this position. This is sulfur not bond to the surface. Again, why it is shifted? We discuss about chemical shift. So this is another example of a chemical shift. So we can plot the intensity of this two states, but again, in the awful equation, which I didn't discuss a lot, intensity dependent on as a cosine, so we should plot in a cosine and theta. So you can see intensity of the west state is decreasing. Oh, increasing versus decreasing. Should be. Yeah, a mistake with the color, by the way. So versus versus unbonded state, which is right legend here. So unbonded state is increased with the angle, and bonded state is decreased. Why does it happen? Because the model which can explain it is following. If you have a two kind of molecule here, one molecule is attached through a tile group to the surface, and another molecule have an upside-down configuration, or lying like spaghetti here. So when you start to rotate, you go to the surface-sensitive regime, and so those molecules start to contribute more. So you have an increasing of a contribution of those molecules with the angle. But sulfur here, it's located close to the substrate and get attenuated with the angle, so it starts to decrease here. So what we can conclude here, looking at this example, so with angle resolved XPS, we can, first, of course, we can get information with this non-destructive depth profiling from the 10 nanometers top layers. And for a polyethylene glycol characterization, we can say that we have a two state of a sulfur, which is a non-bond sulfur and bond to the surface. So we have something like an upside-down configuration or line like spaghetti. So we can calculate a coverage which is a little bit below than one monolayer. So we have a likely not a full monolayer, not an ideal layer here. Also, if you look here, if you calculate a coverage using a sulfate, you can see it's a little bit below, which is basically reasonable because the sulfur is now attached, mainly attached to the gold. And when you do angle resolve experiment, electron should travel through hydrocarbon media and get attenuated. And if we here for calculation, I use a model which is not counting for this attenuation, and I get a low number. Okay, so this is another example when we can see how angle resolve experts can be used for analysis of a thin film. Okay, so now silver interaction with the nitric oxide. This is example for depth profiling. So making a long story short, we can oxidize silver film or silver foil or silver single crystal. We did in many way with a nitric oxide and the oxygen mixture. And we basically form a sandwich structure, which consists of silver nitrate, silver oxide 1, and silver. So this basically, this conclusion was done doing by ion scattering spectroscopy study and XPS study. But how we did it? So we make a depth profiling by sputtering surface with a helium atom. You can do it also with the argon atom. But with the argon atom, it's a much faster sputtering. It's better to do for a more stable compounds. For silver nitrate is gentle, so we prefer to use helium. Well, so while you sputter at the surface, you can get a photoelectron spectra. So you see how the photoelectron spectra change while sputtering. So this is the oxygen peak, particularly characterized silver nitride versus silver oxide when it's gone, when we have a metal. So the same for a silver silver peak, so and for a nitrogen peak. So we can recover it from sputtering layer by layer in Aquinas spectra. We can recover it the element distribution in the sample and chemical state of element in our sample. So this is example of a depth profiling with helium. As I told you, it can be done with argon also or with another noble gases. But one of the things which you should keep in mind with the sputtering is a destructive technique. You come with a hammer, which is a few kilo electron volts, hit your surface hard, and even 1 kilo electron volts is well above of all chemical bonds. So a few days ago, I tried to sputter it with a helium, with the mildest regime. Just a regular hydrocarbon layers, which is, have a nice structure. I can see benzolurine. I can see carbon nitrogen bond. I expose it for a 30 second to helium, and when I acquire the spectra, I can see featureless structure. So it's destroyed completely. So when you do this sputtering or depth profiling with the argon, you have to be careful. The chemical information can be lost at this point. But if you want to look for film deposition of different metal, and if you want to see, for example, gold, titanium, this can be done by this technique if you don't care about the chemical state. Okay, last example, very short because this is pretty much technical things. This is imaging of IFM cantilever with XPS technique. So in our particular spectrometer, we can make a small spot of analysis, and then we can move the spot of analysis across of our sample, which is eliminated with the X-ray. So if you, we can map it 400 by 400 micrometers area, and we have we can have a lateral resolution of 5 microns. So with we acquire we move a spot of analysis from here to here, here to here, here to here. So and we can get image like this. So this is an example of this technique. So we acquire an image in an O1s electron of an IFM cantilever. The problem is some cantilever used to measure adsorption. So you need to know what's on the surface of this cantilever. So if you contact a manufacturer, so sometimes they don't want to tell you, sometimes they don't know what's going on there. But if you know that there's some kind of a chemical reaction occur here, you would like to know a chemical composition of a cantilever. This is just a background for this problem. So it was 8 cantilevers. So the width of this cantilever is about 100 microns. So we focus here with a spot of analysis. We map it in an oxygen electron, find a cantilever, then I measure a chemical composition of this cantilever with a 55 micrometer spot here. So, and we find that it's oxygen, carbon, and silicon slightly oxidized. So, this is an example of an XPS imaging. So, luckily, this is a summary. Today I talk about basic physics behind the photoelectrons phenomenon. So, we discuss a photo emission, we discuss a chemical analysis of the surface. I try to demonstrate an example of XPS study. So we demonstrate an example of a chemical shift, an example of salt gel modified covalently bond peptides. So polyethylene glycol on a gold surface demonstrate us how angle-resolved XPS can be used to identify the configuration of adsorbent layers. Silver oxidation with a mixture of nitric oxide and oxygen used to demonstrate a depth profiling, destructive depth profiling. And surface composition of an IFM cantilever demonstrate us an imaging XPS capability. So at the end of my talk, I would like to thank a few people. So I would like to thank Professor Ron Reifenberger from the physics department, which has inspired me a lot in my research. I want to thank my collaborator Jenna Rikus, Sabrina Jedlika, Steve Baldwin, Big One Farm. And also, I would like to thank all Burke administration and staff member. And I would like to thank you for your attention. I will be happy to answer any question. Actually, I can't differentiate this state from this state because, so I'm working with a chemical shift. So I know that there is no chemical shift of a gold atom when it's a gold bond to sulfur. And I know that it will be a small chemical shift when the gold bond with the oxygen. So counting that it's only a few atoms of a gold bond with the oxygen. So if this state exists, I will be not able to find it. So this is a problem why I can't differentiate in this situation. So I just, looking on these molecules, I can say that there is a state of the molecules when the sulfur far away from the surface. So two possibilities which I can draw. So this is a sulfur, like this, it's upside down configuration, or this is sulfur like this. So, for example, if you make a chemical marker, so if you attach here iodine, for example, somewhere, so it can give me a clue on what's going on, or I need some extra marker, because oxygen and gold interaction will not give me a chemical shift, so I can't play it here. So.
I probably missed it. How do you determine what the energy of the incident X-rays is? For a given sample, what is that?
I have an X-ray gun which have a fixed energy. So what we are measuring here, binding energy. So the binding energy will be, okay, probably I moved too fast at this point. So what we have here, we have a photon energy, which is a fixed, because this is our X-ray energy. So X-ray generated by electron removing from a certain electron level of a certain element. So I know, for example, if I have an aluminium anode, and I remove an electron from a 1s level of aluminium, so then electron from an upper level relaxate and screen this hole, I have a emission of an X-ray quant, and I know this energy of this X-ray quant. So this is energy is fixed. Okay, this is a work function. Without long explanation, we can say this is a work function of my spectrometer. So, and this is a kinetic energy of the electron, which I measure with the energy analyzer. So I can calculate the binding energy of an electron. So, did I answer your question?
If I prove something like zinc oxide on silicon dioxide, would XPS be able to tell me that I in fact do have zinc oxide or just zinc?
Or that
something about the oxygen screen,
right? Actually, yes. XPS should be able to answer this question. Just a problem with the zinc, with the zinc metal, sounds weird, but it has a vapor pressure around, I don't remember exactly, around -1 millibar. At room temperature, so it's very high pressure. So if you bring the zinc to the vacuum, it just evaporates. So oxide will survive, but zinc metal will evaporate, so it needs to be bonded. So of course, theoretically, we can distinguish between a zinc metal and zinc oxide. Just practically, zinc metal will not survive in UHV. So... But if you have another zinc compounds, we can compare them. So definitely it will show a different shift.
Well, thank you for a very interesting presentation. Actually, the question that I had was about the degree of vacuum that you have in your chamber, and you partially answered. Well, my second question was whether we can use this technique for absorptions of liquids and gases on surfaces, which I assume not, because you say zinc would evaporate.
So basically, this is, okay, I should spend some time for this. So this is UHV technique, because we analyze electrons. So electrons should propagate through the vacuum. If you have a gases, electron get lost. Basically, so we need a vacuum at least 10 negative 8 millibar in this particular chamber. So, but again, there is another high pressure XPS which we are going to use in a week time, which allow to walk you in a millibar pressure range. In this case, a liquid can be approached, but we don't have this capability. So this is basically, it can be in-house XPS, but it's an expensive spectrometer, which has a differentially pumped electron lenses. So, and you have a nozzle which is very close to your sample, so you can have a vapor or even a liquid droplet with passing by a nozzle and excite with X-ray, and a photoelectron will be immediately extracted by electron lenses to the differential pumped area. So, but I know only a few spectrometers with such kind of a capability. One is at Berkeley. It's Advanced Light Source, high-pressure XPS, and now it's at Berlin. And if you have approximately $1 million, which you want to spend, you can buy it for yourself. So, and then we can have it in the campus, so I can help you to install.
Thanks a lot.
So it's a small problem, we have to find $1 million.
So it's seen that it's a technique, well, remarkably, with the homogeneous monolayer on the surface.
Yes.
So my question is, how well is the technique work with the heterogeneous surface? For example, if I have one chemical with different conformation, so how well can you differentiate the configuration of the molecules on the surface?
Depending what you call a conformation. So for example, okay, I should have an example here. No, I'm bad, so I don't have it. So, for example, if it's a conformation chemically different, so I can differentiate. Because what we had a mixture of a polyethylene glycol, which just has a different chain. So we have a half of a molecule which was a polyethylene glycol, another half of a molecule was just a hydrocarbons. And now it's a hydrocarbons carboxyl group on the end, with the tiles. So, and we make a mixture. Different mixture. I didn't demonstrate in this presentation. So we've been able to calculate the coverage of a separate chemicals on the surface. Okay. So the problem is not as simple. So it's a challenging. So you can turn around and ask these two girls how it's nice to work with me. And so the first when we come to my office, what I say usual? We have a problem.
So, the spectroscopy can tell the domain size, for example, if the conformation form domains and how much they form domains and how distribution which molecules on the surface. Which spectroscopy can tell you?
Okay. Telling straightforward, I can't tell anything about structure. So, if you ask me about domain size, I can tell you nothing. So what we have here? So we have a spot of analysis about let's say 800 microns to 400 microns. I can make it smaller, but I will average all information through this spot of analysis. So I can't tell anything about the domain size. Okay, I can make an XPS imaging, which I demonstrate, which with a resolution 5 micrometers. So if it will be contrast where, probably I can pick up the domain size. But again, depending on what chemical shift we are talking about and what's the chemical difference we are talking about, it will depend on my sensitivity towards the different compounds. As I told you, when, for example, we have a tile, which is a regular hydrocarbon chain with a carboxyl group on the surface, and another it's a polyethylene glycol. So we were able to distinguish between those tiles, and we calculate coverage on the surface, and it's correlate well with the solution where it was tiles prepared. So it's pretty much depending on the exact sample which you prepared. So I can't give you a very universal answer. So, but if you want to get a structural information, right now, the answer is no, because this is not a microscope. This is a spectroscopy. Spectroscopy operates with the change of the energy. So.
Well, let's give him another round of applause.
Okay. Thank you.